Welcome to the Life of a Gentleman podcast, the number one podcast to learn about the hottest men's fashion and grooming brands. We interview the brand owners so you get the inside story. We'll also discuss fashion, business, and entrepreneurship, and all things gentlemen. Whether you're looking to advance your career, increase your style, or just discover the best new products, you're in the right place. And now, here's your host, award-winning author, entrepreneur, and business owner, Richard Taylor. Hey, Rich, let's start the show.
Hey, everybody. It's DeAndre Marie, the producer of The Life of a Gentleman. Richard is out on vacation this week, so I came to give you a throwback episode where we highlight some of our favorite and most memorable moments that we've had on the show. And I love these episodes because we've had so many great moments on the show that they're worth looking back to. And speaking of, our first throwback moment is when we had etiquette expert Sharon Schweitzer on the show, where she spoke to Richard about how to avoid political conversations. We are at a time where politics is at the forefront of a lot of conversations, but we have to remember to keep it professional, especially at our jobs. And Sharon doesn't disappoint. She gives tips on how to change the topic of conversation and how to shut down those uncomfortable conversations that happen in the workplace. Are people on the job tempting you to talk about politics? Well, make sure you listen to Sharon's tips on this throwback segment on The Life of a Gentleman.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Life of a Gentleman's podcast, joined once again by Sharon Schweitzer. She is an international protocol expert and the founder of Protocol and Etiquette Worldwide. She's based in Austin, Texas. And Sharon is also the best-selling author of the international award-winning book, Access to Asia. Sharon, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Richard. It's a pleasure to be back.
We had a great discussion last time when you came on and talked about Airbnb, and we got so much good information out of it. We are more than happy to have you join us again.
Well, thank you for the invitation to return. It's always a pleasure to be interviewed by the award-winning author of Life of a Gentleman and The Gentleman's Code.
I appreciate that. Now, Sharon, it's funny when we discussed what we were going to talk about this week. We're right in the middle of this political season, and everybody is talking about politics, and they're asking sometimes some very personal questions. So today we thought you could help us out with avoiding these political season discussions.
That sounds like a good topic. I know a lot of states are in the early voting period, and this is a hot topic.
Yeah, and it's one that can get us in a lot of hot water sometimes, too. So we're looking forward to hearing how we can avoid some of those miscues. Now, let me ask you, what is the most important concept to remember when a political discussion pops up?
Well, one of the most important things that I know your listeners will want to know, Richard, is that anytime politics comes sneaking into the conversation, it's important to remember that respect is universally understood. So, no matter our cultural conditioning, we all have a culture that has a deep impact on us, and we understand and we recognize respect. So, worldwide, whether we were born and raised in Michigan or Texas or the United States or maybe South America or Europe, or another continent like Asia or Africa, we understand and we recognize respect. So when we're asked a political question in the U.S. or another culture, it's important to show respect for different questions, customs, and the reasoning behind why someone may be asking that question. So across the globe, the decorum of asking and answering political questions can vary greatly. You know, in Australia, that's an open culture where the open discussion about politics is welcome. So you really have to stop and consider who's asking the question and what their motives may be. A lot of times we think, oh my gosh, I'm so offended, I don't want to discuss politics. But maybe the person asking the question doesn't think of it as offensive in their culture. So we have to kind of stop and take a step back and think about the fact that maybe it's offensive in our culture, but not necessarily in everyone else's. So we have to kind of keep respect front and center.
Wow. I never really thought of it like that. And we're living in such a globally diverse time that we do run into people from different cultures, so it's good that you mentioned that. Now, how can, if somebody's asking one of these questions though, how can we exercise our right to remain silent and keep our views private? Because sometimes we don't want to share those views.
Exactly, and this happened to me, and one of the reasons why I wrote quite a bit about this, and I started writing about this in February, because my husband and I were on vacation, and we were with a large group, and we were doing some touring in Australia and New Zealand, and we were doing some wine tasting, and we were repeatedly questioned about what was happening with the U.S. in the political climate. And we were questioned so frequently during this trip that I decided to write down some strategies for how to handle that, especially when you do not want to, on vacation, talk about politics. So at that point, I wanted to be respectful, and I wanted to respect the other culture, and I knew they were very curious. But at the same time, I wanted to keep my views private. So I said, in the midst of such a contentious political season, I feel it's best to keep my opinion to myself. I really appreciate your interest, and I want to acknowledge and thank you for asking. But at this time, you know, I'm just not comfortable sharing my political views. Now, some folks wanted to continue to ask questions, but I acknowledge and I thank them for their genuine interest because I wanted to respect them as people from another culture. But I also wanted to defer a sticky political conversation because there were a lot of other people there in the wine tasting rooms with us. And I didn't know what other people's views were. Some of the other people that we were tasting wine with, I didn't know who they were. And I just felt like it was something that I was not comfortable sharing in front of everyone.
That makes a lot of sense. And like you said, with a lot of people around and a lot of eyes and ears on us, it puts you in an uncomfortable position. But sometimes there's those people in the room, or maybe someone that you know on a secular level, and they're very persistent and they keep questioning you. How can you respond with grace or graciously when you're faced with somebody who is a persistent questioner?
And that did. That's exactly what happened, Richard, is they kept asking, almost like an Energizer bunny. They just kept coming back and coming back and saying, well, you know, my husband's really tall, and so my husband used to play basketball. And so they kept saying, well, sir, surely you have an opinion. And, you know, my husband said, well, you know, I just haven't made my mind up yet. You know, there are new facts coming out every day, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. But, you know, we get A will come out today, B will come out tomorrow, and then in 3 days we're going to find out that Z happened. And so I think there's going to be a lot more developments that happen over the next several weeks. I'm just waiting to see when all the cards are out on the table. And so he continued to defer the questions, and I thought that was handled very well. And so I said the same thing. You know, I'm just going to wait and see how it all plays out. And then the other thing I would do is I would segue to another topic and say something like, oh, the vineyard is so beautiful, and these grapes are gorgeous, and your views are fantastic. Can you tell me about this gorgeous mural on the wall? You know, how did they paint this? And segue to another topic that's really of interest to the person who's asking the question. So, you know, congratulations on those Wolverines. They are doing so well in Michigan.
Yeah,
or,
they are.
Yeah, go Big Blue. You know, a great job closing that account. How did you do it? But, you know, segue to a topic that is going to be more interesting for them. And that way you can kind of segue and move away from the topic that you really don't want to talk to, that the persistent questioner keeps asking you about.
That was a really nice way you and your husband handled that. And it still showed that you had a lot of class. You weren't blowing the people off, but you were politely changing the subject, which is nice. So I think all of us can take some pointers there. How could somebody who, they're open to the idea of discussing it, how could they engage in a respectful conversation if they did want to share their views this time of year?
Well, you know, political conversations, you know, they can be a conversation starter in social circles where they're, you know, taboo in the workplace. So you just have to know your audience before you engage. So when you do engage in these conversations, number one, I think it's important to show that research has shown that conversation, increased conversation, is associated with greater political action. So answering some questions respectfully can actually make you a cheerleader for democracy, which is wonderful. So expressing your beliefs in a way that's not destined for a political crawl, for example, is really helpful. And I think the best way to do that is to cite research and concrete reasons for why your views align a certain way. So if you've done some research and you have some specific statistics on immigration or economics or healthcare, and you have those research and that statistics and say, you know, this is why my views align this way, that's going to encourage more of an intellectual conversation as opposed to a war of opinions. So, you know, you want to express your beliefs, and then you need to be courteous and let the person who you're speaking with express their views, even if you disagree. So you have to put your listening ears on and, you know, take time and listen and be an active listener, not just someone who's waiting to talk.
Yeah, that's always a good point to remember. The thing about this is, like you said, sometimes you can get into these discussions, but here's the flip side of it. Sometimes, even if we don't want it to happen, the political discussion can become heated. How can you then reconcile conflicting beliefs? Is there a way we can do that?
You're right, Richard. You know, and your listeners know just as well as you and I do that it's inevitable that these disagreements are going to arise. So the key is to try as hard as we can to handle them with grace and dignity and some of that respect we talked about earlier. And it's really tough. I think sometimes we just have to count to 10 and really try to maintain that dignity. And the way I've handled it is to say, that's an interesting way to look at this. You really do bring up some good points. However, my position is, and then set your position out. And just avoid raising your voice, showing anger, you know, throwing an adult temper tantrum, or just abruptly walking away, because then it makes it really personal. The other thing I think you can do is have some really good conversation closers. And these I call my toolkit, where I have some phrases that I can use that are going to let me close this conversation gracefully and slip away so I can maybe go for a jog and take my, you know, my aggression out that way.
Yeah, that's
so
a good one.
So I might say, I might say something like, you know, thank you for your insight. I appreciate your viewpoint, and it'll be interesting to see how things go in 2017. Have a good afternoon, and then turn and step away. Or you could say something like, you know, you bring up a perspective I really haven't thought about. I've enjoyed visiting with you. Goodbye. And say something gracious and close the conversation and step away. That way, you don't have to continue to engage in the conversation. You don't necessarily acknowledge that they're right or that they're wrong, but you don't continue to engage in a way that's going to escalate things. But you close the conversation with grace, and then you step away.
No, that's a perfect way to do it. It's simple, but effective. I like that. We've had this great discussion, and so we realize now there's really a choice we have to make. If we're going to keep our views to ourselves, or if you will engage in a discussion. So, to kind of sum things up, how do we handle ourselves either way some final thoughts.
Well, Richard, I think that your listeners will want to know that whether they decide to respond or not and engage in political conversation, you know, being tactful and polite and remembering that educated responses help us decide and help us cordially engage and graciously decline whenever these inevitable conversations cross our paths. You know, an example of handling ourselves would be to say, you know, I'm basing my political decision at this point in time based on research results from Bloomberg or Harvard Business Review or whatever resource you look at that shows ABC. I think you really need to take time and self-assess your comfort level and be authentic to yourself. Do you really want to engage in conversation or not? Make a decision and then stick to your decision. You know, your spouse may want to engage and you may not, but find a balance that makes you comfortable and then stay that course. Or as they say down here in Texas, don't change horses midstream.
All right.
So if you decide you don't want to talk politics, then just stay with that and be comfortable. But either way, make a self-assessment, and I encourage everyone to vote.
Hey, thanks for the advice again, Sharon. And before you go, could you share your social media for us so that we can keep in touch?
I'd be happy to. Your listeners can find me on the web at SharonSchweitzer.com, which is SharonSchweitzer.com, just like Albert Schweitzer. And my book is on Amazon.com. And I am on Instagram at Sharon Schweitzer. And I'm on Twitter at Austin Protocol.
Okay, wonderful. And that book, the title is Access to Asia, and it talks about U.S. and world culture. Isn't that correct?
Yes, it sure does, Richard. Thank you for having me as a guest on your show.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, and we look forward to next time when we have some more Modern Manner tips from you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, guys. Did you enjoy that throwback moment? Can you believe that's from episode 21 of The Life of a Gentleman? And here we are pulling up almost on 90 episodes of the show. It's truly amazing to see our growth and how many people we've helped with giving our etiquette, business, and personal style tips. Now, focusing on one of Richard's favorite topics, which is business, we are going to reflect on another throwback moment where we had John D. Carroll, who is an entrepreneur, talk about mastering networking. It is so important to make sure you get your name out there for your brand and so you can build brand awareness. But sometimes going to networking events don't always seem so fruitful. So John gives tips on how to maximize, how to make real connections at networking events, and how to build relationships that will last for your business. So, if you are looking to build up your network and expand your platform, this is definitely a throwback segment for you. So make sure you stay tuned to hear how you can master networking.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Life of a Gentleman podcast. Today, I'm joined once again by our resident business expert, Mr. John D. Carroll from Trace Coaching Services. And we are so happy that he's agreed to come back on the show and share some of his wisdom and knowledge that he has obtained over the years through training and life experience. John, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you very much, my friend. I'm delighted to be back.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is going to be a great year. Everyone I've talked to is really full of energy and ready to hit the ground running. So we are so glad that you are here to kind of point us in the right direction for those that are starting their business.
Absolutely. Looking forward to helping any way I can there. And I thought what we'd do to kick off the year, because everybody is probably immersed now and just getting ramped up and kicking off their new goals and objectives for the new calendar year, thought we would expand a little bit on a topic we just briefly touched on in one of the other segments, and that's the importance of networking, particularly for solopreneurs and small business owners that are just getting started. It's such an integral part of what they should be doing in terms of their daily business development activities. I want to spend some time today, Richard, talking a little bit about the do's and don'ts from my experience in having the opportunity to be involved in literally hundreds of these kind of networking events and activities. And what I've been able to take away from that in terms of what works and what doesn't work.
That sounds great, because I know that's a challenging aspect of business that a lot of people face. You don't know what to do when you get to those events sometimes. You find yourself walking around with your hands in your pockets. So I'd love to hear these tips.
Oh, absolutely. Well, let me give you some of the fun facts, as I call them, particularly in why it's so important. There are literally, if you go to meetup.com, for example, there are, the last time I looked, which has been some time ago, there are as many as 130,000 meetups happening on any given week across the country. So that says that there's an abundance of things that you can get plugged into to network and start building great relationships. In fact, the last time I looked, Richard, there were almost 900 events just within a 25-mile radius in the Dallas-Fort Worth area of my office. So there's not a lack of opportunities to network with this overabundance of networking opportunities out there, but you know, the thing that I see is, why do so many small business owners struggle with making networking work for them? And I think there's some fundamental reasons, and that's what I want to spend some time on today. You know, because the short answer from my experience is that most small business owners aren't prepared for success when they walk through the door to a networking event. And as a consequence, it's very easy to get frustrated, and it's also time-consuming and expensive if you don't take the time to prepare in advance.
Yeah, that makes total sense, and that was really some eye-opening statistics that you mentioned, because there seems like there's really an overabundance of these groups all over the place, so if we put in the effort to search them out, we can attend one of these and potentially make some great business contacts, can't we?
Absolutely, and that's why it's so critical. It's not so much quantity as it is quality in making sure that you do your due diligence and your homework up front, so you're really targeting those that are really hitting your sweet spot in terms of your demographics as well as your target market and your customer profile. So you have to have a handle on those. You know, what are the demographics of your business that you're targeting? What's your target market? What's the profile of your ideal customer? And how do these groups satisfy those right up front? And so, you know, as a good friend of mine, Jeff Klein, who's the author of 30 Seconds to Success, and he's also the founder of Speaker Co-op, said one time in a meeting that I attended, there are only two reasons to network. One is to get referrals, and the other is to give referrals.
I like that.
And as I mentioned offline to you before we got started today, for a small business and the clients I've worked with, I historically have found that 90 to 95% of their business and their revenues come from referrals. Well, that's why networking and picking those right targets is so terribly important to growing that revenue base.
Wow, 90 to 95%? I didn't realize it was that high, John.
Yeah, through referrals, comes through referrals. So you ask the question, okay, there's all these events out there and activities going on every week that could hit my sweet spot. Why am I not seeing more success? And again, I think it goes back to preparation and planning, or a lack thereof. So let's talk a little bit about the do's and don'ts in terms of building that game plan that's going to allow you to realize more success from your networking events. And first thing I would say is to reinforce, do your homework. Do your homework and planning up front, and be prepared to do business when you walk through the door. In other words, the minute you land on that ideal customer prospect, start that dialogue and start that engagement right there. And if you walk through the door and you're just bumping around and you're not even sure, am I in the right place? Is this the right group for me, et cetera, et cetera? Then, you know, as Zig Ziglar once said, you're a wandering generality. You know, yeah. you're just bouncing around the room hoping something sticks to you. And that's not the way to build an effective game plan and to grow your business.
Yeah, no, that was good. Okay, so yeah. Do our homework before we get there.
What I always recommend is, if you know somebody in their group, find out a little bit about how long their group's been around. you know, a lot of the groups are category exclusive, so you need to find out, is your industry spot already taken? Because if it is, you're wasting your time by even going, if that spot, if that seat's already taken. So find out, are they category exclusive? Is my category still available? How many people generally attend? And kind of really get a sense for the crowd. If they've got a website, go to their website, take a look at it, see who's there, and then you can start building a specific plan. So do that upfront preparation and planning before you make a decision to attend that next event. Second thing I recommend is have fun and smile. I see so many people in networking events walking through the door, like particularly towards the end of the week, that are wrung out. They look like they're beaten down, they're exhausted.
Oh no.
Or they're having a bad day. If that's the case, don't show up. If you're not prepared and if you're not having a good day and you're in a bad mood, don't go, because that's going to be reflected in your body language and what people pick up from you. And they're not going to be able to or want to connect with you, because quite frankly, they don't want any that bad juju on them. Next thing I would say, in addition to your preparation and planning, know your audience in terms of that, again, back to your ideal customer profile, and tailor your message to reach them, because you'll see if you're connecting with the audience, or you'll see the other people as they go through their 30-second or 60-second introductions. So many people start those out, and I'll touch on this a little bit later, with their name and business name. And if they have about five or six people, if you watch, Richard, your next networking event, in a row, just get up there and introduce themselves with their name and business name, people will start going to their cell phones, and you're going to lose them. What you want to do is make sure that whoever you're targeting gets it, you know, that you don't want them scratching their head and saying, well, is he speaking to me? That's telling them the message isn't getting through. So practice your 30-second or 60-second elevator pitch in advance, and know going through, when you walk through the door, who you want to connect with in terms of that message through your interaction with the group and in your introduction.
That's a good one.
What you don't want to do is leave it up to the audience to figure out what you do and what your value proposition is.
Okay.
You want that value proposition to show through to where people are going to go, ooh, yeah, I need to get with him after the meeting today. Next thing is, do identify 3 to 5, what I call high-value targets, as you start socializing before the meeting gets started, that you want to start building those key intentional relationships with. And those could be potential clients, partners, or suppliers. Could be one of those three categories. And that way, it's easier to tailor your message if you identify some of those high-value targets up front. Because the bottom line is, if there's 30 to 40 to 50 people in the room, well, you know, you're not selling to the crowd. You're trying to pick off selected people that you can deliver value to, or vice versa, to help grow your business. And to on the converse side of that, don't be a business card collector. I see so many people, and even I've gotten to the point now where I don't even accept it, that just walk around the room handing their business card to people. That's not the way to build intentional relationships.
Yeah, I've read that's about the number one no-no when you go to a networking event, just handing out cards, because it doesn't even seem like it'd be effective.
In fact, some of the most effective networkers I know aren't really networkers, they're connectors. And there's a big difference, and I'll explain that in a moment. But they don't even have business cards. They've evolved their business to the point to where they start establishing those relationships, start adding value, do the follow-up, and then, you know, connect with them down the road to where there's an opportunity that's compelling enough that the two will want to do business together. And then you share contact information. But they go through several layers of qualification before they ever get to that point, and they don't have business cards.
Wow, okay. That's different.
Yeah, and I touched on this one. The next one is, do prepare and practice your 30-second introduction in advance. I have, and I think I mentioned this once earlier in another segment, Richard, I have 60 or 65 different 30 and 60-second elevator pitches that I have put together. I've rehearsed, I've edited, I've recorded them, I've edited them again, and I've practiced and memorized them. to where it just rolls off my tongue. And I use them selectively in different groups because I attend so many of these, as a business and leadership coach, I attend so many of these networking events. Is you'll find that probably 30% of the audience, you'll overlap with other groups. And if in any given week, I don't want the same people hearing the same message, because in terms of remembering it, if you say it different ways to the same audience, you'll have a better chance of connecting with them at some point in time. So I have 60 or 65 that I have, and I pull them out of the basket when it's time to go, and I pick the ones I want to use this week, and I go through again and review them, and I take it with me, and it's sitting in the car at each one of the events, so I'm ready to go.
That's pretty impressive.
The converse of that is don't get up there and just spray and pray, as I call it, because there's so many people that are not comfortable in front of the microphone or standing up and introducing themselves, and so they postpone it and avoid it to the point to where now it's their turn and they're at the back of the line and they don't have anything to say. And, you know, I look at those people as, you know, if you're not prepared to tell me in 30 seconds or less your value proposition, what you're all about, do I really want to do business with you? Because if that's the way you prepare within your business, then you're probably not somebody I want to spend time with.
No, that's a good point, John. That makes sense.
Yep. Next thing is, and again, it goes to what you deliver to them. Do have a compelling offer that grabs their attention. You want to have something that says to them, you know, and I'll give you an example. One of the things I say is great results are the key to business success and great vision is the key to everything. And then I go through and talk a little bit about my business. And then I say, you know, see me after the breakfast or lunch or whatever, and I'll show you at least five or six ways to double your revenues and profits within the next 12 months.
Oh, wow, that's really enticing, you know, so you're kind of whetting their appetite.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, you know, who doesn't want to double their revenues and profits in the next 12 months, right?
Right.
So I better get with this guy and find out what that's all about and what that entails. Make it compelling. Make it something that's going to grab their attention and say, I need to engage with this individual. Conversely, don't come to the meeting empty-handed. Again, you don't want, if you come to the meeting empty-handed, I have no reason to see you after the meeting and I'm out of there and off to my next thing. You lose that opportunity. Next thing is, when you're wrapping things up, do ask for what you want. For example, you know, this month I'm looking for blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Again, talks to my ideal customer profile. So if you know anybody that's in this area, please get with me after the meeting today. And the final thing is, don't forget to include the ask in your introduction, because Zig Ziglar again says, we miss 100% of the sales that we don't ask for. And it's so true in referrals and networking as well. You want to leave them with something that grabs their attention, and you want to make sure they're clear on how they can help you. Next do is schedule a minimum of 2 to 3 follow-up meetings with your high-value targets that you've identified through the course of that meeting. Because if you've already identified them, you want to be able to take that relationship and that connection to the next level and to find out what's there and whether it's something you want to pursue. You don't want to leave empty-handed because, again, you've already invested probably a half hour traveling to the meeting, an hour to an hour and a half there, and then you've got another half hour on the back end getting back to your business and engaging again. And the final thing is do follow up with handwritten thank you notes and stay engaged with the people that you want to continue to build relationships with.
Wow. The way you broke that down, John, I mean, there's so many tips. I took notes. I hope certainly that those listening took notes as well, because I think if we apply these at our next marketing event that we attend, I think we can knock it out of the park.
Oh, yeah. And it eliminates the, as I touched on, bobbing for apples. You know, because you don't want to go to an event bobbing for apples and hope that when you stick your head in that cold water that you're going to come up with something. Yeah, you want to do the upfront planning, and you want to take those steps, as I've outlined them, Richard, through to building those intentional relationships. And those intentional relationships are what's going to help drive your business development activities and help you get quality referrals that are going to ultimately turn into new clients, new partners, and new supplier relationships.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Now, John, before we go and wrap this conversation, could you just do us one last favor and let everyone know about your website and how they can get in touch with you if they'd like to get personal coaching from you or learn about some of your online programs? Can you do that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The easiest way to reach me is through my website. It's got a lot of detail there. It's tracecoach.com, and that's TRESCoach.com. And you can reach me at email at john@tracecoach.com as well.
Oh, we really appreciate it, John. Thank you for joining us on The Life of a Gentleman. And thanks for coming on again and giving us some more of this business knowledge. We hope that we can do this again in the future.
My pleasure, Richard. Thank you.
Thanks so much, John. You too. Take care.
Hey, welcome back. Is your notepad full of notes of John D. Carroll's tips? He always brings a lot when he comes to the show, and we definitely have appreciated it. In fact, he was the show's first business expert, so we will always send a special thank you to him. And speaking of business, let's highlight one of the brands that we've featured in the past. Today we have Oz Ingredients Cricket, run by Osric Pilgrim. In this segment, Osric spoke to Rich all about his apparel brand for cricket players. He even explains the story behind their mascot. And yes, he is very much a part of their brand. Stay tuned to hear Oz Ingredients Cricket, only on The Life of a Gentleman.
Welcome back, everyone, to another edition of The Life of a Gentleman's podcast. Today, we have a special guest on the line for you. We are going to be talking with someone who has been through a lot, overcome a lot of obstacles, and started their own brand. And this is no ordinary brand. This is going to blow you away. Everyone will want to learn more about this at the end. Welcome to the show, Mr. Osric Pilgrim. How's it going?
Yay, how are you doing? How you doing, Richard?
I'm doing good.
Thank you for having me.
Oh man, it is a pleasure to have you on the show. You know, it's funny. I hope I don't put anybody on the spot, but man, I got to give credit to your wife. She reached out to us and told us about your brand, man. That's right. That's a phenomenal woman you have.
Right. She's something else. You know, like I said, she shocked me with this one. She normally does, you know, stuff like this, and you know, she felt and always said that, you know, you have a story, you know, and the world should know, you know, and it's inspirational. And I would say, okay, I guess.
Yeah. Now, okay, before we get started, I'm just going to tell everybody the name of the website, and then we'll let you get into your story a little bit, tell everybody a little bit more about yourself. Now, everyone listening, the website is OzIngredientsCricket.com. That's OzIngredientsCricket.com. There's a story to that, I'm sure. We're going to get into that a little bit more as we move forward. But Osric, yeah, tell us about, you know, just take us back and then we'll move forward up into the present.
Well, I'm going to just let the listeners know that there's no such thing as I can't do it, and I can't overcome, and I cannot succeed, I cannot excel. Early in my life, you know, in my teenage years, I got involved with illegal drug activity. Unfortunately, it led me in a place what normally happens with individuals when they go down that path. And this was in the early 80s in New York City, you know, not the early 80s, the early 90s in New York City, where drugs were infesting neighborhoods, and the idea of making money, you know, that way was great. It was almost infectious, you know, very hard, you know, to move away from, you know, as a result, you know, that put me in a bad situation. During that time of reflection, I realized that, you know, it was necessary for me to turn this around and turn it around in a big way. You know, when I was younger, I felt I was always a kind of a grandeur individual. You know, I was a guy who had the best clothes, you know, had cars and jewelry, all these things, you know. When I said, you know, this has to change, I had to do something that is impactful, you know, and this was the birth of the OYC brand.
Yeah, you know, thanks for sharing that story. It's an amazing story, but it does speak to the human spirit, how, you know, things can turn around and change. And you've done a complete, you know, turnaround and taking your life on such a positive trajectory. You know, take us through that. You know, let's leave the past in the past. I mean, it is an amazing story, but You know, what's even more amazing is what you're doing right now and in the brand that you've created. I've got to ask a question right off the gate, though, because, you know, when I mentioned the website name and I said Cricket, you know, everybody's, you know, people might be thinking, what is it, insect? Or what are they talking about? Cricket? You know, what? Well, explain that a little bit.
Where I got the concept from, my grandfather, you know, and I don't know if the listeners can hear that I have a Caribbean accent, somewhat of a Caribbean / New York accent. You know, I am from the Caribbean, and my grandfather was a cricket enthusiast. You know, he was known for purchasing property and watching cricket, you know, and he loved the sport. You know, he loved the sport, you know, and he was and is my hero. I said, you know what, let me take my grandfather's passion and let me turn it into something. And what I noticed, you know, in my research is that cricket is the only sport that men dressed very well. You know, I don't know if the viewers or travelers, you go to the Caribbean nations or India or even England, or South Africa, you would see lustrous grass, you know, and God is out there on the field with all white on. It has kind of an aristocratic feel to it, the sport of cricket. So I said, let me roll that into a brand, you know, and here we are today. It's been extremely challenging. You know, younger individuals come up to me and ask me, how could I start a brand, or I would like to start a brand. The first thing I would tell them, you're out of your mind if I want to do that, because it is extremely, extremely challenging, but it's extremely fun. It's a beautiful, beautiful industry.
Yeah, you know, you're right. It's a way to be creative.
Right.
And if you're a creative person and you're a dreamer,
right,
then starting a brand is for you. The thing I love about your brand, it really does embody the look and the feel of the sport of cricket. And
thank you.
It gives off a real preppy vibe. Makes me think, you know, it's along the lines of Brooks Brothers or something like that. And I mean, if you go to the website, guys, you're going to be blown away. And the quality just looks amazing.
Yeah, you know, I always say that, you know, when you're selling things, you know, via your web store, you know, you try your best to give your potential clients, you know, customers, the best experience, you know, so you get high quality images done. But I'm telling you guys, you know, the images, to me, you know, it's okay. You know, you have to feel this product. You got to feel the certain fabric, you know, and some of the pieces on the line. I'm going to pat myself on the back, you know, a little here. You know, it's good stuff.
You definitely can tell just from the presentation that you put forward. Let me ask you, about how long ago did you start the brand, and what's it been like since you started?
We incorporated the brand in 2009. Like I said, it's been extremely difficult, especially when you're trying to introduce something that is entirely different. You know, cricket is not known in America as much. You would have to been a traveler to see and enjoy just the sight or the imagery of cricket. It's been quite challenging. We have a lot more to come.
Speaking of that, what do you have up your sleeve for the near future?
We just dropped our performance collection. You know, y'all got to check that out. We have a lot of brands out there. They tell you that this particular fabric would keep you dry. You know, I'm telling you that we have a track jacket. It will keep you dry, you know, as well allow you to look fantastic while you're working out, you know, so we have just a few pieces on that performance collection. We have more to come. We'll be dropping another three or four pieces coming up. You know, it's going to be very exciting. Richard, and what you're doing, you know, you're very inspirational, because I'm looking at what you've been doing, you know, with your brand. You inspired us to dig a little bit more deeper, you know, and get these sports coats going, you know, so hopefully before the winter is over, we would have a few sports coats, you know, lined up with some interesting details. We'll blend very good pieces. Throughout the brand, we have a lot of pieces coming. We have a lot of collabs coming.
Yeah, we're definitely looking forward to that. I mean, just some of the items that I picked out on the website, the sweatshirt, a few of the t-shirts, are just, the design is just so unique. And I have
Thank
a question
you.
About
Thank
that.
You,
you know, your mascot. Could you kind of describe that for us?
Okay.
How did that come about? I'm curious.
That is kind of my alter ego. this guy, Preppy, his name is Preppy, he's a kangaroo. This mascot is not only a fashion item that we're going to have, we're going to blow out a lot of, sweat hoodies, and we have hats, we have t-shirts. It's a lot more to come with Preppy ties, pieces like that, very kind of Preppy driven pieces. But the beautiful thing about Preppy is that my wife and I, we started a non-profit organization as Tomorrow's Change. Some of the proceeds of Preppy sales will go directly to Tomorrow's Change. And Tomorrow's Change is a nonprofit organization that provides, the basic necessity for young teenage pregnant or young teenage women with children, or children who are lacking just the basic necessities. So we filtered out some of the proceeds to the org, as a result of the sales. But Preppy's, you're going to see him in different locations at any given time. He was in St. Martin over the summer, at the beginning of the summer, actually. We're going to see him in London soon. We're going to see him in different places visually on the site. And then we're going to have a bunch of different ideas for Preppy. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it is real fun. he's a cool mascot.
Right.
Some of the items that stood out with him on there, I mean, it's definitely a conversation piece.
Right.
It'll get people talking.
And, right.
Hey, congratulations.
And let me say this, too.
Yeah,
again, this is just not an image on a t-shirt. We have a rayon cotton blend on this particular t-shirt. So this t-shirt will launder well. You will be able to wash this t-shirt, and, a lot of these t-shirts you pay a lot of money for, you throw them in a washing machine and it doesn't stand up. A Preppy tee will. Like I said, you have to have certain type of blends in your fabric so that it would launder well, and this is what we made sure that we paid attention to.
No, that's a good point. I like that you mentioned that, because there's a lot of people, I don't want people to think, it's another t-shirt brand. No. It's far from that, folks. When you get on the website, you'll see exactly what you're dealing with. And this is high quality stuff. And just the creativity that you guys have put into this,
it really
has to be applauded.
I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot, man. That means a lot, especially when I see what you guys are doing. Like I said, you guys are extremely polished. We got to collab, man. We have to collab.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I can see a collaboration coming in the near future, because, I think I mentioned to you, I'll be out in around your way in about a month. And, I mentioned on the podcast before, we have some things in the works that are going on for some training for people if they'd be interested in some online learning opportunities. So I will actually be in your city, and it will be a
fantastic,
great opportunity to get together.
Yeah, we got to make that happen. We will make that happen.
Oh, yeah, that's a definite for sure.
Yep. This is what it's about, in business, in your early stages of business, you are only good as the people that you're around. You got to make great collaborations. You have to have individuals who take what they're doing seriously, and if you take what you're doing seriously, this is who you would find. You would reach out to this, and you would find these gems, and like I said, Richard, this will be great. It'll be absolutely awesome.
Yeah, no, it definitely will, and it is something that will make happen for real. This is kind of more about the sport of cricket, just a little bit. So I'm assuming that you're still pretty a big fan of cricket.
I love the sport. I love the energy of the sport. My best player on the field is a Jamaican player, Chris Gayle. Actually, we reached out to him some time ago, and, when I spoke to him, and we were supposed to do a couple of things that could be in the lights coming up shortly. It's a fantastic sport. The energy, people don't know, they think because we're in this country, they think that football or baseball or enormous sports. But if you go overseas, you'll realize that soccer is the largest sport in the world. And guess what is next? Cricket.
Is that right?
Cricket is the second largest sport in the world.
Man, I never would have known that myself.
Like places like India, in cricket and India is like religion. The same thing like South Africa, same thing as like Australia, some parts of London, the Caribbean is massive. It's a very competitive sport. And, it has an air of breeding gentlemen. You know, the sport is a gentleman platform sport.
Yeah, it works well with your brand, you know. And it's funny you mentioned that. It's like if you think about polo, not very popular, right, in the U.S.
I mean, right.
I don't hear anybody that says they're going to see a polo match on the weekend.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
But the brand, but the brand is blown up, and it's built around that vibe that the sport gives off. So, you're kind of mirroring that with cricket.
That's the goal, you know, to show, you know, cricket in that light. You know, in the early days of cricket, it only the aristocrats were allowed to play this sport. It was only for the rich when they came out to check out a game. You know, they were dressed in their best. You know, just like the Kentucky Derby, these people were dressed well. You're going to see that more in the brand as we go on. It's very important for us to make sure that individuals who are purchasing pieces from the brand, they feel like when they go out, they don't see everybody wearing what they're wearing. You know, so we're going to pull back, you know, on certain pieces because we want them to feel authentic. A lot more to come.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it. And as things roll out in the future, we would love to have you come back on the show and tell us a little bit more about... Yeah, what you have, and we'll keep everybody up to date on our collaboration as well, because, you know, like you said, OzIngredientsCricket.com, what it embodies, it aligns perfect with Harrison Blake Apparel, and we'd love, we'd love to make this collab happen.
Oh yeah, right down the pipe. It would be fascinating, the things that we can do together, man. It would be fascinating, you know. And I think we have to hurry up. we gotta do this fast, man. You know, it'll be fantastic.
Yeah, it sounds good. We'll definitely make that happen. Hey, before we close out, sure. Let everybody know maybe your Instagram and then your website so that they can jump on there and get something ordered.
Okay, the website is OS Ingredients with an S cricket.com. Instagram is the same thing.
All right, great. So. Yeah, and if you go to the website, there's a link there at the bottom for all their social media. So just go there, and that's a great hub for everybody to learn more. I'm telling you guys, once you get to the website, you're going to love it. We'd love to get your feedback on it, and we guarantee you're going to love it.
We have a little surprise for you as well, Richard. We have a promotional code specifically for the podcast.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that is a 20% discount. The code is BASICGENT. You know, you just put that in, and you'll get a 20% discount on the basic collection.
All right, great. Okay.
I'm sorry. It's 25. I'm sorry.
25%. Hey, even better. We'll take it. Okay. Even better. 25%. So, guys, okay, not only do they have a great website, Osric was generous enough to give us a 25% off coupon code. Use the code BASICGENT at checkout. Osric, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Like we said.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, man. I really, really appreciate it. You know, like they always say, women are smarter than men. That is absolutely true. My wife set this up, and she was right. This was great.
Yeah. this was a great opportunity, and I really enjoyed hearing the story, and we wish you all the best. And definitely, we'll be in touch soon.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, that wraps up another throwback episode of the Life of a Gentleman podcast. We want to thank you, the listener, for continuing to tune in every Monday at 3 p.m. Could you please do us a favor and rate and review the podcast? We really want to take your feedback and use it for our future episodes so we can make sure that you are getting the most out of all the information we're giving you. Also, if you find yourself tuning in weekly, please subscribe so you can get a notification to your phone, your tablet, or wherever you listen to podcasts to make sure you stay updated with our new episodes. We want to give a special thank you to Sharon Schweitzer once again for being on the show. We want to give another thank you to John D. Carroll. And of course, we want to give another special thank you to our guest, Osric Pilgrim. Make sure you check back with us next Monday at 3 p.m., same time, same place. More tips on fashion, lifestyle, and business. And until next time, take care. These messages are brought to you by Harrison Blake Apparel, specializing in fashion accessories such as ties, lapel pins, and much more. Join the monthly subscription club where you will receive one necktie and four accessories for $25. To learn more, visit harrisonblakeapparel.com.